Hello and welcome to episode 122 of Red Bull Rewind. My name is Spencer Lugmule, and today my special guest is none other than the New York Racing Association's very own Acacia Courtney. Me and Acacia go over a smaller pack of races today due to some technical difficulties. Those races were 3 and 7 from Saturday at Aqueduct's racetrack. And some angles that we talk about are how much class really matters in the small level claiming ranks, and also how important turnbacks are in 7 furlong races. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth, we go back and forth. It ain't good for me, why we do this for? We go back and forth, won't do this no more. And now let's welcome in my special guest for this week's Red Board Rewind. It is someone who has worked with the New York Racing Association. It's Acacia Courtney. Acacia, how are you today?
I'm great, Spencer. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for helping me with, first of all, technical difficulties this morning. We're having this podcast now at 4 o'clock instead of 11 this morning. So glad that you can come back on at a later time. How has it been the first 2 weeks back at Aqueduct?
It's been really good. The racing has been terrific. There have been some really good maiden races, some really good stakes as well. And just as far as handicapping angles, it's something that Andy Serling and I have actually talked quite a bit about on the show. And that's that the first week of racing at Aqueduct, when we moved over there from Belmont, you could really tell that there was a pronounced inside speed bias on the turf. And obviously, Andy has worked with Naira for many more years than I have. And he had noticed this is probably been like the last 3 years that we've seen this. The second week of racing, when we came back, the rails were out at 12 feet, and that seemed to mitigate any kind of bias that we had. I think speed is still a huge benefit and always dangerous, but it seems like in week two, as we just wrapped up the second week of Aqueduct, things have been a lot more fair on both surfaces.
Now, usually it's so funny that it's been the first week every single year. Do you think it's something that has to do with the weather or the time of year, or maybe it's just surprising? You know, maybe it takes a week for the grounds crew to get the track under the right, you know, being as fair as it can be compared to sometimes what we see. You know, sometimes rails have to come in, come out until we get that, you know, fair regulated bias.
Yeah, I think in general at Aqueduct, what it is that the ground is just so fresh. If you take a look at the turf course, it's actually an unbelievable condition. And typically I would say that weather at this time of the year in the Northeast, you know, the turf wouldn't necessarily dry out or come back from any sort of weather that we may have as quickly as it would in other times of the year. However, this fall, we've been really lucky as far as weather, which has been great because we haven't had that many off the turf days. And overall, it just started getting pretty cold. It's been pretty warm. And the turf has been truly fast, not like sometimes what can happen in the late fall at Belmont, where it's labeled a firm turf course, but you can tell that they're kicking it up a little bit, that there is a little bit of give in it. I think it's right now at Aqueduct, it is truly firm. And I think that that ground just on the inside was so fresh. And so now that they've been racing over a little bit more, the rails coming out to a different part of the racetrack too, I think that that's kind of made it a little bit more fair. But it is something that we do notice this time of year. Again, I think this year a little bit of maybe an outlier because it has been so sunny, so warm, not that much rain. But typically in the fall in New York, yes, we do see that turf course just not dry out the same way it would, for instance, in the summer when we're at Saratoga.
I feel sometimes as well, and I mean, obviously trying to play as many tracks as possible, not even just Naira, but, you know, you'll see a track listed, you know, maybe even good or yielding, and it doesn't even look that bad. Or sometimes it's, you know, oh, this is firm, and you can see it's a bog down there. And I know a lot of horse players sometimes get frustrated with how people list, you know, the way the turf course is. Or like we had said, you know, sometimes on the biggest days, there's one bad bias to either side. Mm-hmm. It's always nice, especially with Aqueduct, now having the turf courses. And, you know, people talk about, you know, oh, it used to be so bad going from Belmont to Aqueduct because it would just be favorites and chalk. And it's nice that they've now added the turf courses in. And I feel like this is one of the better spots in the year if you're a New York Racing Association player to really make some money here in November at Aqueduct.
I couldn't agree more. The racing has been sensational. It really has. There's been, I think, on average about 10 horses per race, at least over the last week. It's been competitive racing. There, of course, are, you know, the dirt claiming races, and there are short price favorites. But overall, we've seen a lot of really, really competitive and fun betting races. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it over the last couple of weeks. And this is my second year getting to do full time with Naira. So getting to cover Aqueduct. So I've done three summers at Saratoga and my second year kind of full time with them. So I've just been able to really kind of follow it a little bit more now. And I always loved Aqueduct, but when they had the inner dirt, yeah, it could be a little bit tricky and just maybe not as inspiring sometimes if you're a better. But there's been a lot of turf racing, and of course, turf racing soon, the season will come to an end. So you see a lot of horses trying to get in those last few days of turf racing, and it makes for some really, really good fields. And again, just to kind of reiterate what I said at the beginning, I think the maiden races too have been really mm-hmm. strong and making it really exciting for some horses that we'll get to see next year.
I know Naira is glad to have you. I'm glad to have you today. Let's jump into these two races we're going to go over today. Race number three from Aqueduct from Saturday was an open 20,000 claimer going 7 furlongs on the dirt. Before we get into your selections, what are your thoughts really when you see those 7 furlong races? How do you adjust your handicapping?
Well, sometimes it's a little bit of a tricky distance because you will have horses cutting back a little bit or stretching out a little bit. You'll have the 6 furlong, true 6 furlong types. And, you know, it's counterintuitive as it may sound because it's only an extra furlong, an extra eighth of a mile. For some horses, it's really stretching them to go to the 7 furlongs. And then there are some that just really want longer than this. So it's a 1 turn, 7 furlong. You have that long run on the back stretch there. So I'm always going to be looking for a horse with speed, especially in New York, when we do have a bit of the snatch and grabs syndrome in general. So you're always looking to see how the race may particularly play out. And I thought that it looked like Baby I'm Perfect was going to be the controlling speed.
Was Baby I'm Perfect pretty much going to end up being your top pick, or what else did you like within this race in general?
I did like Baby I'm Perfect going in, and it's funny because Maggie Wolfendale was in the paddock for this race and I was up on the set. And while we both work in the reporting role, I'm now largely in the fall working in the host position. But we still kind of tag team with horses that we're familiar with. So Maggie had seen this horse several times running up here in New York and said that he looked a lot more nervous on this particular day than he ever had when running up here in New York. And to her, that was a negative. And I had looked back at my notes and I knew this horse as he's a Florida bred right from the beginning of his career when Happy Alter had him at the very beginning. And he was always really nervous and kind of an on edge type of individual. And so we had kind of tag team with that conversation, and we all noticed that he settled down on track and that it wasn't necessarily something that was out of the norm for him. It's just a character attitude that we hadn't seen in a while. So I think that was a really interesting and fun handicapping moment for us too. So that did make me then have even a little bit more confidence in Baby I'm Perfect.
This one's definitely interesting. 7-year-old by Flower Alley. I just feel Rudy in the winter is just one where it's not an automatic play for me, but whenever he's claiming stuff in the winter, I tend to pay more attention. Had this one claimed for 20, ran for 16, ran a good second. I think that me being more of a class handicapper, I feel like people sometimes even forget, you know, in these basic, you know, mid-low level claimers, just see what the horses are running well at. If a horse, you know, just won at 12.5 and is jumping up to 20, you know, he's going to need not a lot of the worser types in that specific class, you know, hierarchy to be in this race. But those horses have a lot of time jumping up in class. You want to find these droppers. The two horses I ended up on and played in exacta were Baby I'm Perfect, you know, with the claim from Rudy and drop, and not so much dropping, but just I felt like had the right class level for the 20,000. And then I also like Lost in Rome for Dylan mm-hmm. Davis, who, listen, people who listen know I've been super negative on Dylan in the past. This year, I think if there was a most improved jockey title, it would go to Dylan. I think he's been running really well in spades. This horse dropping out of allowance fields, and you still got 2-1 on, I just thought was so weird. And it almost made me nervous. That's why I didn't really play a win bet, even though I wanted to on this one, that I felt like he should have been the favorite in this race.
No, I don't disagree. And I think it's an interesting handicapping angle, like you said, with Rudy, that Baby I'm Perfect was also a reclaim for Rudy Rodriguez too. And that's always something that really stands out to me, especially a guy like Rudy who will drop horses, who does do well in claiming races. Clearly he claimed this horse thinking that he could still get something out of him and had a race in mind. So I thought that that was really noteworthy. As far as Lost in Rome, I know that his last couple of races, he was off form, but he was just running against really competitive horses, especially two starts back. And this was actually a horse that the barn claimed at Aqueduct back in 2020 for $25,000. So it wasn't really like a significant type of drop. It was just a realistic drop in class, I think. And it was them saying, okay, this is where he fits right now. We got lucky with an off the turf race and a big effort and winning an allowance race at Belmont. But more than anything, this is where he belongs.
For me, it was Lost in Rome was the top pick, also using an exacta with Acacia's top pick, Baby I'm Perfect. Let's see who gets it done in this 20,000 claimer right now.
And they're off. Slow beginning for number three, Pauler. A good start for Baby I'm Perfect, who's out for the lead. Big Mountain now moves up and is racing in second, just off of Baby I'm Perfect. Crypto Cash is in third. Heavy Roller is now moving up from fourth. Speeding Kid on the far outside in fifth. Lost in Rome down towards the rail next in sixth after the slow start. Pauler, who is a little bit tough to handle there, racing in seventh. And American Lincoln is the trailer in eighth. The quarter one in 23-1. Baby I'm Perfect leads by almost two lengths. Big Mountain second by a head with Heavy Roller right alongside. Then 2.5 lengths. Back to a Lost in Rome, who's in fourth, followed by Speeding Kid and Pauler, and then Crypto Cash. The field goes around the far turn after a half and 46 2/5 seconds. Baby I'm Perfect has a two-length lead with Big Mountain and Heavy Roller giving chase second and third. Speeding Kid has now moved into fourth. Lost in Rome down at the rail in fifth and being asked for more as they come off the turn and enter the stretch. Baby I'm Perfect is still the leader here. Baby I'm Perfect by almost three. Lost in Rome is down at the rail. Speeding Kid is on the outside as they move for the 16th pole. It is Baby I'm Perfect in front right from the start. Baby I'm Perfect and Kendrick Carmouche on to victory here.
And the number seven, Baby I'm Perfect, gets it done. $5.90 the winning mutual. Nice dollar exacta paying $11.70 for me. Baby I'm Perfect's winning buyer was an 82. I feel like we kind of just together, Acacia, really crushed this race, just kind of finding the two horses that, you know, like you had talked about the speed with Baby I'm Perfect, and maybe I had the class angle with Lost in Rome.
No, I agree. It was an exacta that really figured, like I said, getting a chance to see how Baby I'm Perfect was acting. And after he crossed the wire, we said, okay, that's why Rudy claimed him back, knowing that he could win this race, probably looking at this exact race at Aqueduct, because Rudy was the one that cut him back in distance too. And it seemed like that was the intention to go this 7 furlongs once again. And he ran really well under Kendrick Carmouche, who is one of the more aggressive riders and a good gate rider in the colony. And I think that speed always so dangerous, especially in these sprints.
I think as well, just especially for Kendrick, I mean, sometimes we talk about snatch and grab and especially more on the turf than the dirt, but I want those aggressive riders. You know, Dylan is starting to become more of that aggressive rider as well.
Agreed.
But I kind of feel with Kendrick, even if I see three speeds in the race and I know that the other two are more, you know, not timid is the wrong probably word to use, but Kendrick for me is always an extra bump up, even at, like, especially because he isn't put on favorites all the time. It's usually, you know, when he's on speed horses, it's 7, 8, 10 to 1, and that's what can cash your multis, not including just, you know, a chalk exacta, which did pay, you know, $11.
No, I agree. And I think one of the interesting things about him is that he sometimes gets labeled as a speed rider. I think that he's just the type of guy who will be a little bit more aggressive. So if he has a horse that's forward and he kind of looks around and nobody else is aggressively sending, he will. Mm-hmm. And we've also seen Kendrick ride really well. I mean, look at his ride earlier this year on Bourbonic in the Wood Memorial, coming from the clouds, coming from last and at such a big price. He rides well coming from off the pace too. I think that he's just a rider who is willing to be a little bit more aggressive when others aren't. And we see him give some great rides, like I said, no matter where he is positioned in the race. But he's one that you can always count on to put his horse into the game if he can.
Let's move on to our second and last race of this podcast, race number seven from Aqueduct, a maiden special weight. 7 furlongs as well on the dirt. We talked about how good the maiden races have been, Acacia. This one lived up to expectation.
Yeah, it really did. And coming in, you know, you have some really big pedigrees you're looking through. You have, for instance, Dad's Good Runner, who's the brother to Paula's Silver Lining and Dad's mm-hmm. Caps. You have some intriguing first-time starters as well. For me, I thought the race was going to be dominated by horses making their second start. Was most interested in Piccadilly, second time out for Shug McGahey. And then to the rail, the number two, Iconic Adventure, who was also making his second start for Belmont. Two trainers that are obviously some of the best trainers that we have in the game, but oftentimes ones that you will see let their horses race into condition and get a little bit of a bottom underneath of them.
The one problem I had with Iconic Adventure was the fact that on that opening race that the red fractions closed from out, but when I see those red fractions and, you know, people a lot of times just bet by or speed figures by itself, I try to downgrade this horse a little bit. It looked about a mid 70 could win this race, and this one run, you know, not even in the 70s. Now you have a horse that's probably going to be bet off of that first race. And I saw a little bit of a downgrade. Piccadilly, I know, I think it was David Aragona was also high on this horse. Mm-hmm. Another closer for Shug. Javier, for me, lately this year, it's just been one I just want more on the turf, which I think will surprise a lot of people compared to the dirt. Just looking at his numbers on Stat Race Lens, he tends to be a higher ROI guy on the turf. I ended up on Sky and Stand. Jose Lescano, Steve Asmussen. I've always been one, and this is another one where if I don't like the one, how can I like the 10 coming out of a slow-paced race? The 76 buyer, I mean, even if he declines a little bit to a set, and he made it, I made it a 72, that second time improvement angle should make this horse run a low to mid 80, and that's what the buyer par by itself is. So this one should be very dangerous and will show speed. And Jose, like Kendrick, is another one that, you know, especially in the winter last year, just really got on horses to get out of the gate clean. And if you can do that at Aqueduct, I mean, you're already, you know, halfway into the winner's circle.
So true. Jose Lescano's been having a terrific year once again. He's kind of one of those guys that's quietly just as consistent as they come, which you have to love about a rider too, and one, as you said, who will make a horse be a little bit more forwardly placed. You knew with the scratch of the plain one that the 1A outperform, who got in off the also eligible list of homebred from Micropoli, was going to take attention because he's also a first-time starter for Todd Pletcher, but he's by Gunrunner, who's probably just been the most incredible first crop stallion with his two-year-olds on the ground right now. A couple of grade one winners, including a Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner, Echo Zulu.
I think overall in this race, too, and listen, Gunrunner, everyone talks about how good American Pharoah was, you know, maybe not on the dirt, but so much on the turf. Gunrunner, I think, has been maybe not the opposite, but he's what everyone thought Pharoah was going to be. And I think overall, when you look at this race, it's kind of hard just overall and in general to take horses in a big field like this, you know, at 5-2 was outperformed. I just didn't really see anything that really made me want to take this horse.
No, I agree.
You know, overall and in general, because, okay, first time starter for Pletcher. I mean, we've seen it all the time. And I still think even though Irad is not, you know, he's 29% right out the gate again. The amount of money that Irad has taken, I really think, honestly, if you covered up names of jockeys, he takes 2 points off the line for any horse he's on at this point. And it's kind of incredible still.
It's slowed down a little bit, but it's still pronounced, definitely. And I think also, too, because he was at first named on Iconic Adventure, and Luis Saez was named on Never Change, was the plain one. With the scratch of the one Never Change, Irad stayed on the other part of the entry, outperform. So when you have a horse that's on the AE list and is in the body of the race, you have to give a preference. So clearly he had given a preference to outperform if that horse were to get in off the also eligible list. So Luis Saez then picks up them out on Iconic Adventure. Little bit of musical jockeys. Obviously you're not downgrading with either one of them, but I think the fact that the preference was given by Irad or his agent to the 1A outperform who drew in off the AE list also just was a perfect, I think, a perfect storm for that horse to be, whether he won or not, too short a price in such a competitive race like this.
I know you gave two horses. Which one would you say would be your top pick?
Piccadilly.
Piccadilly for Acacia. For me, it is the 10 Sky and Sand. Let's see who gets it done in this maiden race right now.
And they're off. Out for the lead is Life is Great, and there goes Dad's Good Runner. Dad's Good Runner has taken the lead. Life is Great is in second. Piccadilly's next in third. Iconic Adventure down at the rail in fourth, and Matt Doyle is in between horses in fifth. Then comes Ansel, who's racing in sixth, followed by the gray Sky and Sand in seventh. Down at the rail is Fizarro, next in eighth. Main Event runs in ninth. Stannis is in 10th. Outperform is 11th. And Labard is the trailer in 12th. A quarter in 22 and 4/5 seconds. Dad's Good Runner leads here by a length. Life is Great races in second. It's a break of two. Back to a Matt Doyle in third. On the far outside is Ansel now moving up from fifth. Iconic Adventures down at the rail. And Sky and Sand followed by Piccadilly. As the field comes for the quarter pole, the half was running 46 and 2/5 seconds. And here is Life is Great now to take over the lead. It is Life is Great in front with Ansel racing in second. Matt Doyle is down at the rail in third. And Sky and Sand is on the outside in fourth. And they're coming down for the 16th pole. And Life is Great has opened up on the field. It is all Life is Great to get his maiden victory, won by 7 or 8 lengths.
At the number 11, Life is Great gets it done, paying $33.20. The winning buyer was a very solid 81. A little bit of an upset here. Still a horse on the outside, though. And Manny Franco, really, really solid race here.
And Spencer, I was considering like mentioning this horse as we were talking about it before the race. I said, no, I can't do that because I genuinely didn't end up picking him or talk about him. But I was so mad at myself after the race because I was in the paddock for his most recent start coming into that on October 21st, where he ran behind Mo Donegal, who I think is very talented for Todd Pletcher. And I had written that day that it was too long. I wanted to see him cut back in distance, that I'd want to see him run shorter. And he ran so well sprinting at Belmont 2 starts back. My biggest question was just, is he fast enough to compete with these? So I was mad at myself because I knew that I had wanted to see him run shorter and I had ignored that, thinking that there were going to be other ones that were better. Not only did he win this race, he absolutely crushed them out on track.
It's always interesting too when you throw a horse out or maybe, you know, make them like one of the X horses compared to ABC and then he wins. Cause then how do you feel about the rest of the field? You're like, well, all my A's must not be that good. Claseris 0-for-13 with 2 year olds, but a positive ROI turning back. And I feel like that's one stat turn back and stretching out where if you can have a positive ROI, that trainer really knows what they're doing distance wise with all their different horses. Listen, Sky and Sand ran second and ran a 67. So he went absolutely backwards and, you know, just overall, Piccadilly finished about mid-pack, but no one else really came for this horse. This one went from a 67 to an 81. Everyone else declined. Maybe this is a race where everything kind of lined up for this horse. And listen, you can only run against who you're running against, but I think I need to see this one more time from this horse. And if Claseris decides to stretch this one back out, maybe he's not fully decided on where the distance is with this one.
I don't disagree in wanting to prove it. However, I will say that you look back even, for instance, in his debut when he was a big price, as typically the barn is not known for firsters, was only beaten half a length behind High Oak, who became a graded stakes winner over the summer. I think won the Saratoga Special for Belmont. And then again, two starts back, ran really well sprinting, though it wasn't a super fast figure. I do think Mo Donegal, who beat him last time, is a solid runner. I've actually seen for Bob Claseris and for Steve Claseris too, those stretch out, turn back type of moves are really ones you have to pay attention to for the barn. Yes, we'll have to see if he can prove it and what was really behind him on this day. Maybe it wasn't as strong as it seemed like it might be on paper. But I do think that there were things, as we're redboarding here, there were things there in the forum to say and explain why this horse ran the way that he did.
That is all the time we have for today's shortened podcast due to some technical error, probably more on my side than Acacia's. Acacia, where else can people find you on social media? And also give a quick shout out to In the Ring with Acacia Courtney.
Yeah, I have a new episode of In the Ring with Acacia Courtney coming out shortly on the In the Money Media, under the In the Money Media umbrella. Really happy to be doing that and focusing on the sales and breeding pedigrees. You can catch me in social media at Acacia_Courtney. I will be with the New York Racing Association in America's Day at the Races for one more week, and then I head south for the winter and get ready for opening day December 3rd at Gulfstream Park.
I'll be sure I'll snag you for a couple golf streams as well. Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I want to thank all the listeners out there for listening to not only this podcast, but all the In the Money Media Network shows. I also want to give a special, special thanks to my special guest this week, Acacia Courtney, for dealing through some pretty annoying technical difficulties and being able to come back later in the day to finish up this podcast. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Florentale. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Cotney. May you enjoy your wonderful Thanksgivings, and we will see you next time.